Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
High protein, low carb, or high carbohydrate, low fat. Do you have a diet you believe in? There are a lot of conflicting claims in the world of diet and nutrition, we don't have to tell you. And we often turn to Marion Nestle here, a professor of nutrition and sociology at NYU, for some answers to these questions. She's an expert on food and food politics, and she's just written a book all about calories. It's called Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics, written with Malden Nishan. Welcome back to the show, Marion Nestle.
Oh, glad to be here.
So what's a calorie?
Oh, a calorie is a unit of energy, and I like to explain it as 100 calories. The amount in two Oreo cookies is enough energy to bring a quart of water to a boil.
It's what they call a kilocalorie.
It's a kilocalorie.
Technically.
Yeah, it's
what
the calories on food labels.
1,000 calories is what we call one calorie. Does that distinction matter?
Oh, it matters to scientists a lot. To people who are eating, yeah, it ought to matter. But the calories on food labels are really kilocalories. That's one of the reasons why calories are so confusing. And calories are really confusing. That's why we wrote the book.
What do you mean about the Oreos and boiling a pot of water? What I mean, you can't use Oreos to boil a pot of water. So what does that actually mean in terms of our bodies?
Well, you could use Oreos to boil water if you burned them in a bomb calorimeter and surrounded the calorimeter with water and the water would boil or come to a boiling point. In our bodies, we don't boil when we eat. You know, we have 6 quarts of blood. Our blood doesn't boil when we eat 6 quarts of when we eat 600 calories because metabolism taps it off in little pieces. It's what keeps us warm.
Our blood boils when the government tells us what we should eat.
For some people, yes.
What is an empty calorie, which you write about in the book? Is that a scientific term?
No, it's a nutritionist's slang term for food calories that don't have nutrients that accompany them. There are two things to understand that are really, really important. One is that if you're worried about body weight, it's calories that count. If you're worried about health, it's what's in those calories and where those calories come from.
Listeners, what would you like to know about calories? Call and talk to Marion Nestle, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Want to further pick apart those two? Because people usually don't, I think. If we eat too many calories and become overweight, that's considered casually the precursor to the diseases that we would be worried about from eating the wrong things, heart disease, diabetes.
Well, they go together, and I think that's what makes it so confusing. You can never look at one aspect of food by itself. You always have to look at it in context. And much of the research that's done on specific nutrients or specific kinds of foods doesn't take calories into consideration because they're so hard to measure. They're easy to estimate, and they're almost always estimated wrong. One of the major themes of our book and one of the things I learned from the research doing it was the extraordinary difference between calories that are measured and calories that are estimated. And that is the source. That difference is the source of a lot of problems.
Explain that further.
Well, if you measure the amount of calories that an average person in America needs on a daily basis, it's usually 30 or 40% higher than people estimate or report their calories to be. It's impossible to see calories in food. You can't see them, taste them, or smell them. The only way you can monitor them, short of doing really fancy experiments, is to look at their effects on your belt size or on a scale, so that people are stuck with making guesses, and the guesses are usually wrong. People eat much more than they think they do is the bottom line.
So is a calorie of hamburger nutritionally the same as a calorie of pasta?
No, there would be different nutrients in those foods going along with it. The only pure empty calories are the ones in sodas, which is one of the reasons why people like me are so concerned about soda drinking. You get a lot of calories without any nutritional value with them.
Sugar.
Sugar.
Would it be the same for candy bars?
No. Candy bars usually have some fat, and that'll have some vitamins with it, and sometimes they have nuts and other kinds of things that have some nutritional benefits with them. But they're what are called foods of low nutrient density, meaning that they don't have as many nutrients for their calories as a vegetable, a carrot, for example.
So here's a follow-up to that. Kylie in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. So, yes, my question is about sugar. I am trying to watch my sugar intake, and a friend has suggested lots of substitutes, agave nectar, sugar in the raw, honey, sucanat, stevia. How should I be approaching sugar? Is it all the same, or is it different?
Well, stevia is not a sugar. It's because it's not digested. So that's in the category of artificial sweeteners.
Okay.
The others are all sugars. I don't care what they're called. They're still sugars. The Department of Agriculture lists 40 or 50 things on food labels that
but
are sugars.
But for Kylie's health, sucrose, glucose, high fructose corn syrup, all the same?
They're mostly the same. Fructose is a particular problem, and agave is particularly high in fructose. I would go easy on the agave sugar particularly. But all sugars should be eaten in small quantities. A little sugar goes a long way. Go easy on the sugars.
Thank you for your call, Kylie. So another version of my question is a calorie of pasta, the equivalent of a calorie of hamburger. You said they're nutritionally different because they include different things. Is one worse for you than the other? I'm trying to get at the low-fat versus low-carb diet fad competitions.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer. Basically, the quick and dirty answer is, yeah, they're the same. A calorie is a calorie from the standpoint of weight. Once that food gets digested and gets into the body, it's metabolized in ways that produce energy in pretty much the same way. If you picked a different example, one that had more fiber in it, for example, some of the calories in that food wouldn't be digested, and those are accounted for in calories on food labels. But from the standpoint of weight, modest little tweaks, they're the same.
Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. Marion Nestle's new book, Professor of Nutrition and Sociology at NYU. And Harvey in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, you just answered my question, and that is the calorie count on insoluble fiber, whether or not it's counted as calories but not burned by the body.
Yeah, the fiber is confusing because there are two different kinds, and the insoluble fiber isn't digested at all, so its calories don't count, and they're not included on food labels. And the other kind is soluble fiber, and that poses a headache for people who write food labels because bacteria in the intestine digest those, and you do get some calories from that. But in general, the indigestible parts are deducted from the calories on food labels.
Thank you for your call. The subtitle of your book is From Science to Politics. I thought it was interesting in the book that there were people who thought identifying a calorie was an instrument of social control. What's that history?
Well, that history is a very interesting one. I mean, and the people who are writing those books, and there are two of them now, and they're very good books, one by Nick Culleter and one by Jessica Mudry. Excellent books. They argue that once you start counting calories, on the one hand, you convert food to a number and you completely lose sight of the cultural and taste values of food. I couldn't agree more. The other is a more complicated argument that says that once governments started measuring calories, they began to use those measurements as ways to evaluate whether countries were adequately fed or not. For example, the Food and Agriculture Organization defines as hungry any population that is consuming an average of less than 1,800 calories a day. And public policies go around that. I think those are complicated arguments. We need some measure of undernutrition and overnutrition in the country, and the calories aren't a bad way to do that. But I think those are really interesting books and well worth reading.
Lester in Manhattan. You're on WNYC with Mary Nessel. Hello.
Oh, hi. I was wondering what the latest findings are on the benefits of extremely restricted calorie intake. Every now and then there's a wave of publicity about that various
right.
scientists have taken very little calorie intake, and they claim a great many benefits.
They claim longevity.
They claim longevity.
If you eat really, really few calories and to the point where you actually get really, really skinny, that there are longevity benefits for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we covered this extensively in the book, and I think there are a couple of quick things to say about it. One is it absolutely extends the lifespan of experimental animals, and that's been shown over and over and over again. In people, it's much more complicated. For one thing, being starved makes most people miserable. It's just a horrible thing to have to endure. For another, if you look at the plots of longevity versus body weight, the best health outcomes are at body weights considered normal, that is a BMI from roughly 18 and a half to 25. Below very, very low body weights for height are associated with all kinds of problems, and the mortality curves start going up. So I'm not sure this is going to work in humans.
Barbara from Chester asks on our webpage, when you get older, especially women, she says, do you gain weight even though you maintain the same amount of exercise and you don't consume more calories?
Oh, you do. It's one of the most miserable things about getting older. I feel your pain. Basal metabolism declines with age quite seriously. And I find now that I can hardly eat. I feel like I eat nothing, and if I'm not careful, I gain weight. So you either have to up your physical activity or you have to lower your calorie intake, and that's no fun at all.
A couple of quick things before you go from the news. Do you want to weigh in on pink slime?
I certainly do. It's safe, it's nutritious, it's cheap, and it's pet food.
Pet food?
Yeah, that's how you make pet food. I don't think we should feed it to kids.
Speaking of pet food, did you have as much fun writing this with Malden Nieschheim as you did your recent book about pet food?
Yeah, we've done two books together. We have just a ball, a blast writing these things. We have very, very similar outlooks on nutrition, and that makes it easy.
And we had David Agus on the show to talk about his book, The End of Illness. I don't know if you read it. He was skeptical about vitamins and supplements in general, saying that barring pregnancy or scurvy, there's no need, according to science, to justify nutritional supplements. Vitamin D, well, do you have rickets? Are there any that you actually recommend for people to take?
I don't, unless they have particular illnesses. I say eat a healthy diet that takes care of all your nutrients. And if you're worried about vitamin D, go outside.
All right. So the same people who are inflamed by Dr. Agus will be inflamed by you.
And they will.
We'll follow up on that. Maybe we'll do, let's see, a festival of pet food, calories, and vitamins.
Sounds like fun.
For a special show in the green space or something. Marian Nessel, professor of nutrition and sociology at NYU, has now co-authored Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.